The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Thanks for being with us. It is a, I don't know if it's a good Tuesday. Yeah, it's fine. There's another game today. It's the beauty of the World Series. Today, everybody's let down. Today, everyone is going off on how can Christian Walker and Tony Perez Chica send him, and how does Christian Walker get thrown out? Because Scherzer was on the hook. He was right there for the taking. And so today, as we're doing this, the sky is falling. That is the beauty of sports. We are going to have John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, with us today. I'm going to switch gears a little bit because there's some ties into the Michigan cheating scandal with Jim Harbaugh and the Pac-12. I want to have John on, and we will get into that. Opening comments brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business, as always. And through the years, that is Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate their support. I got to the ballpark yesterday about noon, sat in on Tory's thing. There's just this little note they're going to open the roof that allowed me to ask Tory, does the ballpark play any differently with the roof open or closed? For some reason, people are really fascinated with the roof, and some of you have not been down to the ballpark before. New audiences coming in. It's been a long time since we've had playoff baseball. And he gave some good stuff on that front. It allowed me to tell the Curt Schilling story. If you didn't know the Curt Schilling roof story, so Curt used to have this belief during the World Series time back in 2001 and when he was here in Arizona that the ballpark played much differently and it wasn't very friendly when the roof was open and the panels were open, the balls would fly out. Having witnessed McGuire, Sosa, steroid era thing during all of that in 98 and beyond, probably some validity to that. But remember one night I was walking out of the ballpark with an executive of the Diamondbacks, one of their main people. And we were walking and there was an interview with Curt and the audio was playing. It was after I was done doing my show over on KTAR and the audio was playing and Curt was saying, you know, the roof's open, this, that. And this executive turns and looks up at the speaker and says, tough bleep, Curt, pitch bleeping better, you know. So Curt just had that way of rubbing people in a certain sort of way. So, you know, the roof's open last night. It was beautiful. Went down on the field beforehand, and it was a cavalcade of superstars. Aaron Judge was down there. Mookie Betts was down there. I visited with Randy Johnson. Randy came by. It's really good when you see players that are done and they actually – are not lost souls. Lost souls happen in our business a lot, not just broadcast, but in this world of sports. There are guys in sports that they get done playing and they're in their mid-30s and they usually don't know what to do with themselves. It's why the NFL Players Association has released data through the years that shows a certain percentage, a high percentage of players either or file for bankruptcy, either or divorce within 3 years after they're done playing because they just don't know how to assimilate into society. Randy's not that. Everybody knew Randy as this big, you know, and we had great chats through the years. The year that I did 80 play-by-play games when Jerry Colangelo called and asked me to do 80 play-by-play games, actually he told me to, Randy and I flew together one time that I'll never forget. We were in Cincinnati, and he was flying out a day early because he had to start in St. Louis the next day, and we got fogged in. We got fogged in the airport, and it was like a five-hour delay. And he gets recognized, of course, and these kids come over, and they want a picture. And then Randy just says, hey, wait here a minute. He goes over to the candy store, buys a whole bunch of candy, and is handing candy out to these kids. And we just start talking, and for some, I don't know where the conversation went, because I love going deep with people. We got really deep. We got so deep that when we got onto the airplane, he's on one side of me and I'm on the other, and he's talking about his moment with his dad when his dad was about to pass away, and it was something. And when Randy first got to town with Arizona, I left him alone. The first day that I got here, I went over to Charles Barkley's locker and introduced myself, and Charles looked up at me and just said, big effing deal, and went back to reading USA Today. True story. And Randy, after, I was like a week or so, I hear this, hey, why don't you ask me to be on your show? Okay. Well, I like to leave greatness alone on days that they pitch. And from there, we've had a very good relationship, I would say. None of this stuff is friends. It's just you understand the working side of it. And it's friendly, I would say. So yesterday I see Randy and he comes over and he pats me in the stomach. He's like, yeah, we've all changed. I'm like, oh man, really? And he's asking me about this. And I'm like, this is called Rally Scruff. Now it's a Rally dish towel or a Rally mop or something. I don't know. See an enemy. And we're laughing about that. But he started going, I said, how are you really doing? It's not, hey man, how's it going? It's, I don't know, how are you really doing? And he immediately went into all the things that he's working on. I know about the photography. Everybody's done the photography. But he's doing some things that I'm not going to talk about here today because some of it is things he's still working on that he has to keep private. I just know that at some point, whether it's here or on the television side, I'm going to end up doing some things with Randy that are going to be, in my view, very cool. Jordan Hamm was with me down there in the field. And Jordan's been working on this story. I think he's going to publish it today or I don't know when. Kenny Dillingham shared with Jordy a Randy Johnson story that Kenny is tied into Randy. And I asked Randy about it, and Randy's like, I don't remember that. And I think I would have remembered that. He wasn't doubting Kenny. He was just like, you know, he's in his 50s. This story happened when Kenny was 19. It involved Randy Johnson. It's kind of funny, I think. So Jordy worked on that for a little bit. We stayed downstairs, and then this was Jordan's first World Series. And I've done this, was in the 2001 World Series, top to bottom and all that. And it's great. It's pretty amazing. But for someone who's never covered it before, like Jordan Spurgeon from our team, I took him to Texas, and Jordy Hamm, those two are going to grow. And those two will look back on their careers. You know, one's in their 20s, theirs in their 30s. And they're going to say, yeah, man, I remember that World Series 10, 15, 20 years ago, just like I'm doing. So I like to spread it around and have everybody get involved. Today, Jordy and Jordan are going to be at the game. I felt like experiencing a little bit last night. So they had this chimichanga apple tart stuffed something that they'd been pushing really hard. And usually I'm thinking you guys just want to know about the game. You just want to know, like, why was Christian Walker running with his head down? And if he just would have looked up, they would have won the game. I feel like when you come into the ballpark and you put down your hard-earned money and you know there's a stuffed chimichanga that's got vanilla and chocolate and Cracker Jacks and chocolate sauce on it, and they're selling it at the ballpark, which they are, just for the World Series, you'd be like, oh. Brad tried that, and he's still upright today. I don't know if my diabetes, if I'm got it today, I shouldn't joke about that, but I don't know where my blood sugar went last night. But I brought some of that over to Jordy. I got one, sat it down in front of Jordy. I said, you have to experience this. And he's like, what? So we had fun. We should have fun at this. This is not brain surgery. It's sports. Many of you went to the game last night, and you had your significant other, or you had your kids with you, or a buddy. I had a couple friends that were texting me, and I went and visited with them, and they had their kids, and they were just beaming, like, I'm actually doing a dad thing. I'm actually doing a really cool dad thing. And so I feel like where we are today, it's 2-1. There's still there's still four games left, two left here in Phoenix. I still believe the Diamondbacks have the better team, but they made a boneheaded mistake. Remember in Philadelphia when they didn't play well? Not late. Remember early in that series? Didn't play well. Okay, yeah, I was at home last night, and they didn't really play well. I don't know what Garcia's status is going to be for Texas today. It's a huge question mark. I don't think Scherzer is going to pitch again in this World Series. That's huge. That means you have to go through Eovaldi and Montgomery, and again, you're going to figure out, like, tonight, being a bullpen game, this is really, I would say, must win for the Diamondbacks in a bullpen game. Because you're going to face those two, and chances are, well, for sure, you're going to face Montgomery down in Texas in Game 6, and they can bring Eovaldi back on short rest, I would think, because it's for everything. So it was devastating last night on one hand. On the other hand, it was great for the community. It's great for the community. Tonight will be as good a night as we've had in Arizona sports. I don't know. I'm not going to say ever, but you have Wembanyama and San Antonio in town tonight against the Suns. Wembanyama is this freak. He's this number one overall pick who just runs the floor like he's Devin Booker. And he plays the game in a different space. Rookie of the year for sure if he stays healthy. And he's going against the Suns downtown. Tonight you have game number four of the World Series, bullpen game. Right next door to each other. 120, 130 yards apart. I don't know. And that's going to be fun. So we'll have John Wilner after this timeout. I'm not really going to get into this whole what are the Cardinals doing, because I think it's Michael and it's, you know, Kyler. After Sunday's game, I'm going to get into this a little bit. After Sunday's game, Jonathan Gannon says, yeah, Josh Dobbs is our guy. And then yesterday it's like, well, no, he's not. We're going to change our tune and go with Clayton tune. And, well, Kyler, you know, there's a chance. And this just feels like Michael is all over it. And today is the NFL trade deadline. You know, when the owner gets involved in things in any sport, it's just not good. It just isn't good. Back away, disappear. You don't need any accolades. You just don't need to be seen. So that's that. John Wilner's next. I do want to say that while I've been going through all of this, and it's coming into the holiday season, and I've been looking around our house. I want to take a minute to talk about Goodwill. Goodwill, Arizona, around our house, we've got those little stashes of shoes, of jerseys, of things, because we're now empty nesters. In the last 6 weeks, we started cleaning out our house. We made a lot of trips to Goodwill, Arizona. I don't know about you, but there's over 100 locations. There's got to be one near you. The one near us is like 2 miles from here. And it's that where you give back to those who are in need, or those that just say, you know what, I need some lightly used basketball shoes for my kids, or some soccer cleats, or some jerseys. Goodwill, Arizona, Goodwill. We appreciate their support. John Wilner's next. All right, it is Wilner Hotline time. Every week we talk with John Wilner of the Pac-12 Inside and Out that he covers with Wilner Hotline. You can find it on sports360az.com. And of course, on his social channels, follow him on Wilner Hotline. All right, you were at Cal USC, correct?
I was there for most of it. Yes, correct.
You were there.
I did a doubleheader on Saturday for me.
What did you do?
I then went across the bay to Stanford, Washington.
And coming away, because let's just leads right into USC Washington this week. Who's the better team, USC or Washington?
Well, that's a good. We didn't think that would have been a question until recently, right?
Right.
Washington's not playing very well, right? Since the Oregon game, they struggled obviously to beat ASU at home, and then it was nip and tuck against Stanford. So, and yet USC's not playing well either. So I would say I think part of Washington's problem is Michael Penix isn't healthy, and you can see he's not firing the ball around. I think his ribs are hurting him. He was sick. I would say Washington is probably a little bit better and will play much better against USC than it has against ASU and Stanford the last 2 weeks, whereas USC is USC. They are very flawed. I'd say Washington's a little bit better. And I would pick Washington to win that game, although it should be a ton of fun, a lot of points, great primetime college football.
Yeah, and we talk Heisman every week. Is this a Heisman game with Penix and Williams? Or do you think one or both are already out, or do you think one or both are still in?
I think Williams is on life support for the Heisman because he did not look good at Notre Dame, and that's always an important Heisman stage, right? Notre Dame Stadium. You got tons of East Coast voters watching. I think that was problematic in the loss to Utah. He is like a fringe Heisman contender right now. Penix, I'm not sure Penix is a front runner. I think J.J. McCarthy of Michigan probably is, but Penix is in the top group. If Washington wins, as long as Penix plays fairly well and Washington wins, he'll hold his position. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think Williams needs everything to break right the rest of the way, not only for USC and himself, but also for the other contenders. everything's got to break right for him to get back into this thing and possibly win a second.
John, is he tied at the hip with Lincoln Riley? Is Lincoln Riley tied at the hip with him? And I mean it from this perspective. There's a lot blowing around that Lincoln Riley and the Chicago Bears make a lot of sense and that he's not really all that for USC. You buying into any of that, or is that just people wasting time behind microphones, breathing air into talk shows and all that?
Well, I mean, I think he's into USC for $10 million a year or something like that, right? So there's a certain amount of being into your employer at that level. I do not think there's any tie. No. I mean, I think Caleb Williams is going to make the best decision for Caleb Williams come December, and I assume that's going to be the NFL. And Riley's going to make the best decision for him. Are there issues at USC that he probably didn't think were going to be there? Absolutely, yes. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, he's coaching one of the biggest brands. They're going to be in the Big Ten next year, and he's making somewhere in the $10, $11 million a year range. If the Bears come after him, would he take it? You know, probably. But would the Bears come after him? I don't know. He hasn't shown he can field a decent defense in any of his two stops at Oklahoma or USC.
Oh, but you know, the attraction, like $10 million, that's just a drop in the bucket for, this is a sexy franchise.
Could be.
Legendary Bears. We need a new city in Chicago.
Well, you know, media. One piece of that is, and for your fans, your listeners and viewers, you do wonder what the Cliff Kingsbury experiment in Arizona did for a coach like Riley. Very similar to Kingsbury. Incredibly you know, talented play caller, great reputation on offense, did not Kingsbury in college at Texas Tech did not field a quality defense. And right. Riley, there's a lot of questions about Riley, you know, on defense. So I wonder if NFL teams are going to look and think, you know what, Kingsbury didn't work out for the Cardinals. Why do we think Riley's going to work out?
John Wilner with us for a few minutes. Chop it up every week. You can follow him over on Wilner Hotline. His content's up on the website at sports360az.com. What is it that's working with Jed Fish from your view from a distance? You know, beating Oregon State, national game on ESPN. They're one win away from being bowl eligible. It was the worst program in America just 3 years ago. What's gone right for him from your view?
Well, I think certainly right now, you know, he's got a good quarterback, a quarterback that really works, right? I don't know that they'd be where they are if Jaden Delora hadn't gotten hurt. I think that's an important piece. Noah Fifita has played fantastic. But he has used the transfer portal extremely well, and he has attracted some talented players, right? I don't think Arizona would be where it is if not for the transfer portal. The climb out of the gutter would have taken much longer. So Fish had been very good about finding the talent, the right talent, the pieces that fit in the portal and getting them to Tucson. The Johnny Nansen hire on defense for defensive coordinator last year, I was skeptical. It didn't look like a smart move last year, but Nansen's unit has been fantastic. They are if you broke down the Pac-12 into, you know, 24 offensive and defensive units across the conference, I would argue that of those 24, Arizona's defense is the most improved from last year. They've done a very, you know, look at their lines of scrimmage, right? They have more talent and more size on the lines of scrimmage. And there were many seasons where they simply got overrun at up front, right? So I think a lot of it has been the transfer portal, smart coaching hires, and he's got it rolling. He's got the right quarterback now. I think that's an important piece. You don't ever want to wish one of these kids an injury, but certainly I think, you know, the Delora situation, I don't know that they'd be there right where they are right now if Delora was still a quarterback.
Flip it around over on Arizona State. They play Utah this week. Man, Utah just looked terrible. And the week before, I think you and I spoke about the great job that Kyle Whittingham has done year in and year out. They just got destroyed by Oregon. And what do you make out of this game this week?
That was like a different team.
Right.
You never see that happen. I can't remember the last time Utah got beat like that. Just physically manhandled at the line of scrimmage, inept on both sides. Now, they've got a ton of injuries. They're playing a backup quarterback, but, you know, that was still the same team that beat USC and had one loss. I was very surprised. ASU, you cannot find fault at all with the effort under Kenny Dillingham, and that was a really good performance against Washington State, even though the Cougars have struggled. I kind of think the Sun Devils are walking into a little bit of a problem, though, you know, because Utah is going to be fired up after a loss like that, right? I mean, you're kind of going into the Hornets' nest, and the Hornets are out for blood, right? So in that regard, the timing's not great. If you're ASU and you're going in there hoping to kind of sneak up on Utah, you don't want to do it after Utah's coming off a 29-point loss, and you're coming off a victory, right? That also will help Utah kind of get locked in. Is, hey, ASU just beat Washington State. So timing could not be worse for ASU in that regard. And yet, at the same time, the circumstances are good. Utah's reeling. So Sun Devils have to have some confidence now. I mean, look at ASU. Down to the wire against Colorado. Down to the wire against Washington.
Yep.
And they almost, you know, the USC game was a lot closer than two touchdowns for most of that game. Okay. They're playing really well. They're very competitive. But boy, this is not the time or place to face Utah, in my view.
Yeah, and you have the Stanford game, and so
absolutely. They're in almost every game.
Yep, I think Kenny's, and I know it's hard. They're getting their heads kicked in the win loss column, and I know it's been hard internally over there on that staff with the losses. But you know, I'm seeing progress there.
Yeah, absolutely. You if you're an ASU fan, you could not have asked for more given the roster and the circumstances with the bowl.
Before I get you out of here, I want your view, if you just set back for a minute, and on all fronts around the Michigan scandal that is going on right now. And how prevalent is that? You talk to college coaches. I hear about football at the high school level of guys hanging in weeds and taking videos behind trees. The college level, though, John, and this has been known evidently, like people have suspected this for a while. Are there Pac-12 ties to this scandal at Michigan? What are you hearing? What do you see out of what's going on there with this scandal in Michigan and spying?
Well, there are Pac-12 ties because Michigan's spymaster bought tickets to the Oregon-Washington game last year in Eugene to scout the Ducks. And they had the seats were on behind the Washington, the visitor sideline. So they were directed toward Oregon sideline. So clearly they were scouting the Ducks as a possible playoff opponent.
Okay,
so,
okay, let me jump in on that.
Sure.
So, John, is it he gets the tickets, he walks down, he's got his binoculars just looking like a fan, and instead he's just sitting there the whole game focused on trying to pick up what's going on. I'm trying to take it right down to the very granular level for the fan out there about this story. That's really what was going on. It was that in depth.
Yeah, but they're not just looking at using binoculars. They're using phones to video the other team's sidelines. They got the entire game videoed with their phones, but maybe even with more sophisticated recording devices. That is what's going on. And then they match up the signals with the plays. There's actually a picture that was posted on an Oregon message board and on Twitter. X that shows a guy in Autzen Stadium. It's taken from either one or two rows behind him, and it shows him holding a phone up like this, recording the Oregon sideline. And then the guy's looking behind him because he notices somebody is taking a picture of him. So that's what they're doing, is they are taking video of the sideline of the team that they're scouting. I don't know. I've looked into whether there were other Pac-12 games scouted last year. So far, nothing has come up. But look, this is there's more to it that's even been reported, both in terms of the spying scandal itself. And then you wonder, all right, what else? Because one thing we know about NCAA investigations is they start looking into A, and they're interviewing people and looking through documents, and then they find B. And B leads to C. And so you do wonder if you're Michigan, what else were the Wolverines doing? And will that stuff turn up in this investigation? And also the other piece of this is they've got Big Ten schools lined up to give the NCAA evidence, right? They've been turned in by their other team. It's kind of like with the ASU recruiting scandal, how they were turned in by former employees who were so irate about what they were doing. Well, Michigan's being turned in by other Big Ten teams that are so irate. So I think it is very serious. It's going to get worse. And I would not be surprised if Michigan either gets banned from the Big Ten championship or possibly even the playoffs.
So I'm going to go back to your A and then the B and the C.
Yeah.
Here at Arizona State or U of A basketball, they got down to Z. It took forever to go through the entire investigation. It's still going on down here. Can you see Harbaugh losing his job over this?
I can, yes. And I can see something like this is going to move more quickly, right, than the Arizona State football recruiting scandal, the Arizona basketball recruiting scandal, because – it was happening this season. It's a real-time competitive advantage that, and I think the Big Ten has a there's a policy in their bylaws about sportsmanship that they don't need to wait for the NCAA to rule. The Big Ten Conference could make a determination on its own as long as there's enough support internally from the other schools in terms of votes. They could vote to ban Michigan this year because it's a real-time issue, and we don't usually see that, right? Typically, these scandals, you know, we find out a year after the fact, oh, you know, one of the schools was, you know, bought a player here, you know, did something there. This is real time. So I think the Big Ten very well might act this season.
If there were a czar of college football, would they have already acted? If there was a commissioner of college football, which
I don't think they would have already acted, but they would have the investigation would be going on. They'd be getting evidence. And believe me, they would rule in the next couple of weeks on Michigan. And, well, they would need to have, in order to ban them from the Big Ten championship, the Big Ten's got to do that. But a czar of college football could work with the conference office to come to a determination and work with the college football playoff to determine whether Michigan should be allowed to play there. The playoff this year, you know, the playoff is its own entity. It doesn't report to the NCAA. It doesn't report to the Big Ten Conference. But if the Big Ten comes out and says we support a ban in the college football playoff, then the playoff would have the cover to act.
But the Big Ten would not walk away from that much money, or would they? I mean, like, really, John, think about that. Would the CFP, the first of all, the Ohio State-Michigan game takes on a whole new meaning, just knowing that this is coming, because game day signs will be crazy good and funny, which I like. One. Yep. Two, the amount of money that, okay, we're going to ban one of our own. We're the Big Ten. We're banning you. You can't even be in the CFP. CFP's not going to touch him. Or could the CFP says, forget that. We have too much money on the line. We have too many ratings points at stake. Everybody's going to want to watch this. This is the scandal-ridden team. We love scandal, John. Come on.
Yeah, well, certainly there may be some pressure from ESPN. I don't know. But, you know, you can't – there's not a line necessarily, a direct line to draw between the ratings Michigan would generate this year with the dollar amount that's going to the Big Ten, right? The dollars are fixed, right? So it's more a matter of ESPN on line one – you know what? We don't want you to ban. You know,
we don't want that. We're selling these games. Come on, we're gonna make sure Colorado, even if they're not any good now, is gonna be at this big bowl game because we're selling this. We're ESPN. Yeah. We own college football. We are the czar. We are the head of it all.
Right.
Right.
You know, they could put a little pressure on for sure. But the Big Ten. This is a next level scandal, and it has affected the competitive integrity of Big Ten games, right? So I really think there's a great chance that they're going to get banned from the Big Ten championship. And so you don't know what impact that's going to have in terms of them qualifying for the CFP, right? Right. Because championships count, losses in championships count toward whether a team gets in, and certainly the Ohio State game, you know, whether Michigan's available for the Big Ten championship would affect the Ohio State game. I don't know. There's a lot of layers, but it's not the same scandal that we typically see because it impacts the competitive integrity of Big Ten football.
Okay.
So It could have an outcome that surprises people and flies in the face of, well, it's not good for business. Because you know what? Competitive integrity is not good for business either.
I remember when Todd Graham was down here and his son and the sign stealing and all that stuff.
Yeah. But you know what? Sign stealing in game.
That's been going on forever.
And nobody has a problem with that. Hey, if you can steal signs, good for you. Right. That's what I think. This is way different. This is absolutely against all NCAA rules. It's next level stuff. And again, you wonder what this investigation is going to lead to. Michigan's already had the Harbaugh was just suspended 4 games for failing to comply with an NCAA investigation into other rule violations. What else is going on in Ann Arbor, right?
Yeah, no, that's right. I'll let you go off that. Good stuff, as always. Have a great week. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
There's John Wilner, and we're back with more after this timeout.